Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's always scraping the bottom of the podcast pot of life. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast for our big feedback show after this week's wild episode of Survivor, but that is something that we will put on the back burner for now as we are getting ready to break down the first 6 weeks of Big Brother Canada with America's player, Eric Stein.
Oof.
Eric.
Eric, my man, what is good?
Rob, what is good? I'm going to take a hard pass on the Big Brother Canada talk, but I'm excited to dig in on Survivor, the first installation of the spring of Stein, and I'm feeling so positive and so sunny today that I'm going to go from T-Bird to E-Bird. That's how excited I am.
E-Bird
today
is here. No more clammy E. E-Bird is here. And we're going to talk about this week in Survivor as we will talk about, was this good? Are we headed in the right direction? Is Survivor coming apart at the seams? Eric, I can think of no better guest than to talk about this all through with you.
You know, I love to nerd out to this stuff. I've been spending my last 48 hours thinking about the tribal council, the format. Is it moving in a good direction? Is it moving in a bad direction? Is it all of the above? I haven't slept since.
Okay. All right. Good. That is perfect. That is how we like to get our guests. And Eric, we'll talk about that all. First, let's get the quick catch up. What's going on? Everything, all things going great on your end?
Oh, yeah, everything's great. My life is one big edge of extinction, just slowly fading away, waiting to wave the flag. But spring's upon us, so maybe, things are looking up.
Yes. Eric, the calendar has changed to spring. Have you said that that was your favorite of the seasons?
Well, I have a good 3 weeks before the sweat starts. So, I'm hanging in there. This is a good season for me right now. Baseball is upon us. Good TV in the mix. Yeah, I'm actually feeling pretty good. I'm feeling very happy today and excited.
Okay. Thumbs up on the Jets' new uniforms.
They look like green. That's it. Yeah, just like the Eagles. It's really not all that new. You would think if they were going to, design something, they could have gone a little further down the path. But, I'll still buy five.
Okay. All right. So, Eric, we're going to talk about this week of Survivor, but let me ask you your thoughts on the season, because we're coming into this. I haven't really talked to you at all since we talked about Celebrity Big Brother 2 and what a fantastic season of television we got to watch with the celebrities playing Big Brother. But now we've shifted to Survivor. What has been your feeling overall on the edge of extinction?
Well, it was always going to be tough to follow up on last season. Last season had, wall to wall, some of the best characters that we've seen together at once in many years. I mean, there was from villains to likable villains to rootable people to gamers. You had a real spectrum last season. And obviously, this season doesn't have quite that level of personalities. But what I'm really loving about this season is that I feel like everyone really wants the game badly. No one is rolling over. People are making plans. They're hustling. And I think that makes for an exciting, chaotic game. And I think what we're seeing now is sort of the aftermath of that. Obviously, the game was sort of straightforward in the early going. But now that people are really in the mix here, I think we have a real choose your own adventure sort of scenario, and no one's rolling over, which makes for an exciting game. If you're going to get up at Tribal and fight tooth and nail to the death, it means you want to be there. And I would way rather see that than people, march to their own demise, like a season, like a One World or something like that. There's nothing worse than thinking you're going to come in seventh and then coming in seventh. At least everybody here wants to be here, including the edge players. So I like it.
All right, I want to talk about the Edge of Extinction twist real quick up front with you. Now, many of our listeners know you from your time on Big Brother, but there's a part of Eric Stein that we don't always talk about on the podcast, the part where you are a creator of reality show formats. You have consulted on different reality TV shows, and I would love to just get your take on what do you think of the Edge of Extinction as a twist overall.
Okay. I am going to go a little inside shop here and get deep. You open up a can of worms, Rob. So here we go.
A bed of worms?
Exactly. I love that we are getting to ride out some of these fantastic characters all season. That is a hidden gem that I think is really entertaining. I personally would prefer to see that content on an All Access, on a Secret Scenes. For me, we are seeing in Devins exactly why I do not like this from a game format standpoint. From a game format, it's patently unfair. If someone makes it near to the end and then gets voted out, whereas he's already been voted out of the game, they're not on level footing. Also, once you've been voted out, you have nothing to lose anymore. He is playing with reckless abandon because who cares? If you get voted out 1, 2, 7 times, it makes no difference to him. He's already had that crushing moment. And I think it's allowing him. Yeah, exactly. He went to the Pauly Calafiori School of Gaming. So I think he's now playing with the weight off of his shoulders, and it's making him a reckless wild card in the game. So from a game standpoint, I think it's totally unfair. From a TV standpoint, I think it's a lot of fun. And then if you want to go a third level, from a logistical standpoint, it's kind of a nightmare for them because you need an additional crew that's out there filming with them. What I would love to see is an option like the Edge of Extinction, except they're sort of playing their own sub game. How fun would it be if when we got down to our final 6 or 7, if they got to come and watch a competition on the Edge for like an extra $25,000 or a visit from home or something along those lines. But I don't like it impacting the game proper. I know this is a hot point of contention. I would never, and I mean never, vote for someone who got voted out over someone who did not get voted out, because at its core, the object of the game is to not be voted out. That said, I love the show taking big swings. When a format gets tired, the show gets put out to pasture. There's been tons of television formats that did not change through the years, and they get so stale and so tired. I mean, for God's sakes, by the 27th beef Wellington they're cooking on Hell's Kitchen or the 10,000th weigh-in on The Biggest Loser, we get it already. So kudos to Survivor for always trying something new. And I think we've gotten a lot of fun out of it. And thank God I am actually in on your theory that they cast Reem to be the first one out to hold the entertainment value of the Edge.
I think people have said that. I don't think that I've necessarily said that. I don't think that they had the foresight to say, oh no, this woman will host the Edge of Extinction. She will be our mayor of Edge of Extinction and carry this for the season.
Do you think she was going to the final four when they cast her? You think they thought she was going to really roll deep?
Well, I do think that historically Survivor has cast people to be their first boots, where they know when they put a certain person out there that this person is probably going to be the first boot, or they're going to make it far and they'll be incredible television either way.
Yeah, and I think they got their money's worth here, and I like it. I like it. I love her being the forewoman. It's been greatly entertaining. And I like the cutaways. I don't think it's taking away from the time on the show. Mm-hmm. I like seeing the check-ins. And, you know, it's a really interesting part of the experience. So it's kind of pulling back the curtain on what we would normally not see once the players are eliminated. One of the other game components I do not like about it is they get to exchange information while they're there. So you're coming back armed into the game with so much more knowledge than the other people who are still left in the game.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something you said about Rick Devins, where that he's been voted out of the game already and he's playing like he doesn't necessarily care. And I don't think anybody else has put it as succinctly as you did. Yeah, it's almost like that he is about an hour and 20 minutes of Bill Murray into Groundhog's Day, where, you know, he's been through it enough times that he's just doing and saying whatever he feels like to whoever and is not really worried about the repercussions at this point.
Yeah, and I think in a way it's blown the lid off of his game. I think he was playing a little bit tight, a little bit passively, and he's a passenger no more.
Right. I mean, just going back to that conversation that we talked about so much last week, where he is talking with War Dog about working together, and he says to War Dog, like, "Yeah, oh yeah, I'd love to get back with you guys. Actually, I would never get back with you guys because I hate you guys." And that, in that context, like, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and I also love the fact that then he bounces back this week and he flips on his own comments. He just completely pulls that back because he doesn't care. I truly believe that. And I think what it actually allows you to play with much greater freedom. And I think that you're, to your point, this is a point you actually made. I'm not putting words in your mouth this time. I think he is playing now like he's a returning player. Mm-hmm. He's learned the lesson. He knows what it feels like. He knows what to sniff out. And he's just going for it. He is all in. And it's making for a really tough, explosive dynamic for everyone else at this point.
Okay. All right. Let's start to get into this tribal council from this past week. Why don't we get into this conversation? I will let Kieran from Maryland open up this conversation. Kieran from Maryland leave us many voicemails this week, but we will go with this one to open this conversation.
Hey, Robin, Eric, it's Kieran from Maryland. I want to know from Eric if he thinks it's a good idea to not unload all the strategy and plans until Tribal Council. So going into this Tribal Council, Julia was not the target whatsoever. The target was David or Kelly. But during that crazy and live Tribal Council, things went crazy and resulted in Julia going home. So I'm wondering if it's a good idea to wait until Tribal Council to unload all the strategy and plans. Eric, my question to you is, do you think it's a good idea to wait until Tribal Council to unload all the strategic plans and talks?
Okay. Just to add to just the information that we're talking about here. So this might have been more of just a unique circumstance where we had a big blindside on day 22 of this game. Here we are 24 hours later back at Tribal Council. And so I guess the question is, did this occur because there was just not enough time for the plans to come together, where basically we saw 3 days of action end up transpiring in about 20 minutes at Tribal Council? Or do you think that perhaps that there is some new emergent gameplay happening?
I think it's a little bit of both. And I think what we really just saw was just god awful gameplay from the Comma crew. I mean, what a disaster through and through. I think they flew way too close to the sun and went up in flames. They got way too cute for their own good. And eventually people are going to compare notes. Now, to your point, I think that normally happens back on the island. Maybe in the time crunch, they didn't have the time to compare notes. But then as Jeff is moderating and they're talking through this, where they really went completely off the rails is they're trying to promote this narrative to Kelly that they're with Kelly so they can blindside Kelly. So they're carrying on at Tribal like they're going after David. So then you have both David and Kelly unsure, well, is this the plan or am I the target, which inherently requires them to compare notes. So then they do. They realize they've both been told the opposite things. Rick stirs it up. They've alienated their own alliance members and voila, an explosion of a complete disaster. I don't understand how Julia could think that other players don't get to have plans of their own, don't get to compare notes, and they were just really sloppy. So I think if you're playing a good game, you can tie up your plans way before you go the tribal. But when you are trying to juggle multiple balls and doing so poorly, this is what happens.
Yeah. Eric, my mind has been thinking about this a lot as well over these last couple of days. And I've been looking forward to talking to you about this because I want to just use a little bit of a sports metaphor to describe this and wonder if this is possibly the same thing where we've seen in the NFL, for instance, that we end up having less sort of, okay, the play gets called in from the sideline, everybody lines up to more of offenses that are able to change things up at the line of scrimmage. A couple of different plays are called. Meanwhile, the defense is all just like milling about. They're not giving the offense a look. Do you think it's possible that Survivor is shifting more to there being less gameplay, less talk back on the island? Because that's really when your plan could get sniffed out. You're telling people what's going on. People have the chance to adjust and counteract to what you're proposing. Whereas if the plan is happening at the tribal council, does that give the people who are coming up with the plan more of an advantage to be able to move fast and get something done?
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. I think being able to call those audibles during game time, I think that that is probably where we're going. And I think production probably will not like that because it doesn't give them the footage they need for the rest of the show. But I do think that any game, be it a reality competition, a sporting event, a board game, anything, the strategy evolves with time, sticking with sports metaphors so that way everyone will shut this off. Now, baseball, they're using sabermetrics and they shift the entire fielding positions to accommodate where someone's going to hit it on the field. That wouldn't have been done 10 years ago. You know, people learn different strategies, emergent strategies come up, and people alter their gameplay. So yes, it's definitely a way to protect where you're going. But it's not good television, and that's a major boo-boo if you want to be on the side of the producer. So I think that if that is what's happening, it will be stomped out quickly. But I also think I am not anti the new evolution in tribal, because to my earlier point, I am going out clawing, kicking and screaming, doing anything I can if I think my name is up. So kudos to them for not just sitting there and taking it. Do something about it.
Because I don't want to be, you know, a old guy and, well, I mean, of course, that you know, it doesn't matter what I want. But what I don't want to be is a cranky guy complaining about how that this is bad when in the past, for so many seasons of Survivor, the plan was set in stone. Everybody is just going through the motions of Jeff is asking questions and people are just trying to not necessarily give up the blind side. And so basically everybody is set in stone. Nothing anybody is saying is changing anybody's minds. And we're just like going through the motions of having this tribal council, where as opposed to the live tribal council that we ended up seeing, then the person voted out was definitely different than the person who was going to be voted out going into tribal council. And if the show is shifting in that format where it's not two acts in each episode like it was this week, but maybe we're spending a few more minutes at tribal council and things are more electric at tribal council, is that necessarily a bad thing?
No, I actually think that that's a good thing. It just makes the rest of the episode story harder to tell because it's not informing what we're ultimately going to see in the end. But I think it's better. I mean, what you previously had was a week in review. It was like a recap for the viewers. Talk us through how we got to this point. Now let's reveal what we all already know. And what we have now is an actual game component, which is giving people wiggle room to actually dig in and, you know, shake some things up a little bit. I think that this is going to be a real asset to someone who's actually good at the game, because you saw the people who were adaptable here and coming up with plans and riling everyone up versus the people who became belligerent and frazzled. And it made a huge difference in the outcome of what this tribal ultimately led to.
Okay, let's take another question about this. And we want to hear from Victoria from Baltimore. But sad to say, this is not our good friend, Victoria, who calls us all the time on the Summer of Stein.
Hi, y'all. Victoria from Baltimore. So I just have a fun entertainment idea. Go to the Survivor Facebook page comments and look at all the comments regarding the show last night. They were pretty wild, you know, everyone saying, how could they do this, let this go on for this long, this tribal council sucks, where was their reward challenge? You get the picture. And I don't usually agree with the casuals and the Facebook fans, but to be honest, I'm sort of on their side a little bit. You know, I think that it's crazy that Jeff kind of lets these people walk all over him now. You know, I feel like maybe Jeff could have, you know, mediated a little bit more. I don't know. Let me know what you guys think. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Eric, we like the idea of the live tribal council in theory, but when everybody is up out of their seats and moving around and talking, now, is the show almost impossible to follow if you're somebody who is not super well versed in where everybody is coming from?
I think so, but I also think it makes it more exciting. So I think it's, you know, I could see it both ways. I do think that people are a little bit stuck in their ways. People like their routine and like what they expect. That's why TV shows are formatted in the first place. That's why you always get tribal council when you do. And why if you tune into an episode of Chopped, you know exactly what's going to happen every second of everything, because people tune in and expect to see what they're accustomed to. And that's what they want. But why not try something new? And also, this is very inside as someone who has played a reality competition before. But when you're in that moment, you're worried about your game and your $1 million. You aren't worried about what it's going to look like on television. Mm-hmm. So yes, it makes sense for Jeff to want to stop it. But if I'm a player, I'm doing anything I can to stay in that moment. So, you know, it's like you're not thinking about it the same way as you would be thinking about it from your couch necessarily.
Yeah. Jeff seemed thrilled with the entire thing that was going on.
Oh, I agree. I don't think, I think regardless of where we fall on this, I do not think this is stopping anytime soon. I think he loves the fact that it's stirring and crazy, and he can promote that you never know what to expect on any given night.
Mm-hmm. Does Survivor, in your mind, need to make any sort of adjustment? Would you like to see any sort of that you need permission to get out of your seat, or you're only allowed to out of your seat for 60 seconds, or do we need anything to sort of rein this in or just let it go wherever it's going?
Well, I do think that one thing that, and I guess this is essentially telling people to stay in their seats, but one thing that would be fascinating and stop a lot of people in their tracks, but still allow for the scramble would be, okay, you can have these conversations, but you have to have them out loud. No whispering in someone's ear, no pulling someone aside, no stepping 10 feet away from the set. Have any conversation that you want, go into whatever grouping you want, but we're not, whispering into each other's ears. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to say something, say it at your own potential, you know, expense.
The problem is that you have people who are sort of all the way on one end of the action and so far away from everybody else. Like, I really think it was a disadvantage for Aurora that she was all the way on the far left of the tribal council set, where it seemed like that she was left out of some of these conversations that were going on.
Well, sure. Except you saw, you know, some of the others scurry people right over.
People did get up. Yeah. So, you know, where you're seated, I do think plays a factor.
No, I agree. And I do not know this with certainty. You might be able to speak to this, but I would imagine that you have assigned seats at Tribal.
You do.
Yeah.
So I mean, at least in Survivor the Amazon, you did.
Right. So I think that that is actually a very good point then, as we're doing like this deep dive here, is that they're putting you with people that they think probably that you're apt to converse with and have these side conversations with. And so therefore it is to your detriment if you're out of that conversation sphere.
Yeah, I do think that what happens just in terms of looking at a lot of these tribal councils, the person who is sort of like the swing position where like a lot of the conversation is going to be framed around them, they do tend to be sitting in the middle of everybody.
Right. Like on Big Brother, the deciding vote is always the last vote.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Which is not a coincidence either.
Okay. Eric, Reality Curtis wants to know, how many oofs do you give Julia's tribal council performance that ultimately got her voted out?
This is a 4 of 5 oof situation. And for the those not in the know, over the summer of Stein, Rob and I created our patented oofometer, which is apparently If you do poorly, it gets an oof from me. I didn't even realize it, but it did. And we created this oof scale, and five is the most oof-tastic you can be.
Okay. And Eric, what is the conversion of oofs to opes?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's tough. I think you have to be 3-1, right? I'm not sure.
3-1. Those three oofs is one ops.
Yes, and one half ops possibly.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, no, it was atrocious. But I cannot give it the maximum five oofs because there has been worse moments from this season, in my opinion, but she just did horribly. I cannot sugarcoat this. She's insulting people. She's implying that other people should just go along with whatever it is that she says. She's frightening people by speaking of the many plans. Well, there can't be many plans. There can only be one plan. So which plan is it? She was begging people to compare notes and turn on her. And the fact that it ended up with her allies voting against her as well, we don't even know how it got that far off the rails for her. But I mean, boy, did this ship sink quickly.
Yeah.
Or, you're such a passenger, Rick. Just
such a passenger.
Yeah. Oof. She was a passenger on the Titanic. It was a long, painful sinking.
Eric, what was the five oof moment that you're referring to?
Oh, Keith, his whole stay on the show.
Oh, no.
I know. It's not. It's uncouth and very oof of me to, insult a 19-year-old. But for my margin, and yes, I have not gone back and watched every season recently, this has to be one of the five worst players I've ever seen.
Wow.
He's so atrocious on every level, from his social game to his physical game to his delusions of grandeur to his lack of conviction and staying power in the game. Mm-hmm. I never in my life have I seen anything on the show like him walking out and saying good luck in the challenges now.
Yeah. All right. So you make a good point. Like, if we're really trying to look at somebody who was not exceeding in the three areas of the game and then ultimately did go on to surrender, I will say that at least he had a little gumption. He sold out Reem on that first episode.
Yes. And that's true. It looked promising for about 30 seconds there, but it did not pay off ultimately.
Okay. All right. So you say 4 out of 5 oofs for Julia. Let me give you this question. Here comes Tara from Albany has a different question for Eric Stein.
What up, my dudes? This is Tara from Albany, New York. I was just wondering, on a scale of 1 to 5 oofs, what would you give Ron Clark for throwing out Victoria's name while she was standing right beside him at Tribal Council? They crushing it.
Okay. All right. Eric, did you catch the moment when Ron was talking about Victoria?
I did not, actually.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Let me play it for you. You tell me if it deserves any oofs or opes. Here is when David Wright is asking Ron if he works with Victoria.
You're not working with Victoria.
I'm supposed to be. I hope I am.
Nothing has changed, I swear to you.
Okay.
Oh, I liked that, actually. I thought that was an appropriate answer from him. He hedged his bets. He said, yeah, that would be nice. Mm-hmm. I think I am. That's good. All right. I thought that I actually think that was a fine moment for Ron. I actually think that he had a relatively good episode here. He put his tail between his legs. I love the way he went back to the tribe and said, hey, I've been a monster. I see this, but I am loyal. And let me now do what I can to help you guys because I do care about you. I thought he had as good of a recovery as he could have had after Eric's boot.
Yeah. Are you enjoying the Ron Clark experience so far?
I am, although I'm really having a hard time envisioning Matthew Perry as him. I feel like maybe like the guy from Modern Family possibly would have been better casting.
Which one?
Well, actually, really any of them. But
Ed O'Neill?
No, the redhead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like he'd be nice. That Phil actually wouldn't be bad either. I don't know. I don't feel like Matthew Perry has his energy.
Would David Schwimmer be a better Ron Clark?
Actually, I think he would do a nice job. Basically, so would Lisa Kudrow. Anyone other than Matthew Perry.
Okay. All right. Then let's play one. This is from Jennifer, has a great question for Eric Stein here. We're very lucky to have here on the Survivor Feedback Show with us this week. Here's Jennifer.
Hey, Rob and Eric, this is Jennifer. What would you consider yourself, a shark, a minnow, or the poop?
Okay. Eric, of course, we all remember this iconic moment from this past week's episode where David Wright has had some great analogies so far this season. He's got another one.
This morning in the water, I spotted this huge school of minnows. But eventually a shark came through and ate a bunch of them. And tonight, with the reconstituted Kama, it's likely that one of the Lesu is a minnow.
Did that really happen?
Yeah. I was taking a poop, but yeah.
Devin, now we have a new analogy, thanks to David. Where are you? You a minnow or a shark?
I might be the poop.
All right.
We're seeing the evolution of the aqua dump here. another next level gaming.
I might be the poop.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Rob, I'll give you one guess as to which you think that I'll say I am.
Okay, Eric. Well, everybody knows what we are. Okay. So what I would like to do, though, is, you know, we are down to 10 people left in the game. We've got 6 people that are now on the edge of extinction. And so I thought it might be a good way to take stock in where everybody is at in the game. And let's go through the cast and let's talk about who's the minnow, who's the shark, and who, like Rick Devins,
I might be the poop.
Hope you realize this is going to be the format of season 40 now. Sharks versus minnows versus poop, no doubt.
I might be the poop.
Yes. All right. My only hope on Survivor Sharks versus Minnows versus Poop that we might get a return of Ricky Williams.
My belly hurty, hurty, colon, fully. Need healthy. Medically speaking, of course.
Oh, man, what if it's the, it could be the Poop Tribe Hall of Fame. You could have Bruce and Darnell. It could be amazing.
Yes. Okay. Lots of ideas about what to do here. All right.
So who's looking sharky from?
It smells worse than a porta potty at the Jersey Shore after an all you can.
All right. We're going to lose people. All right. But I thought that this would be okay. Who are the sharks? Who are the minnows? And who, like Rick Devins, might be the poop, Eric? So let me give you some names.
I like this. I like this a lot.
And yes. Then we are going to be able to tell who is the minnow who's just, you know, swimming by with their little school. Who's the shark ready to eat everybody? And who's the poop who's just there in the water?
I'm ready.
No chance. Okay. Well, why don't we start with David Wright himself?
Shark all the way, and great gameplay from David Wright to identify himself as a hapless pack member minnow. I love it. He's reshaping people's perception of him. He's telling them what to think of him, when in reality, anyone who, you know, knows anything about David Wright knows that's not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, I thought David was going down in flames on the season. This is pretty remarkable. Even though there are plenty of game left to play, I'm pretty impressed by what Kelly and David have done here. I mean, they should have been dead to right episodes ago. So the mere fact that they're in the mix and still making things happen, and it's very much what David did, his first time around also. I love the way that he will find solutions to any problem that he encounters in this game. He's a shark for sure.
Okay. What about Kelly?
Shark.
Another shark. Shark.
I mean, Rob, she has sat on these her idol for how many tribals in a row now? I mean, if someone literally sneezed in one of our directions, we would have that idol out so fast. I would be running to the cauldron to play it. This takes a lot of nerve. And obviously, she might know some things that we don't as viewers. So she probably has more reason than we think to not be playing it. But let me tell you something. She has shown her shark tendencies this time around. She came to play. She has a huge chip on her shoulder. This is a business transaction. Let me tell you something. Even in the 5 years difference of her first season to now, her life has changed a ton. The first time it may have been an adventure. It may have been fun. It may have been her favorite show. Now she's leaving her family. She went out there to win $1 million and she's playing like it. So whether it happens or not, she's a big time shark.
Okay. David Wright and Kelly Wentworth are up for the leads in the Sharknado remake.
Ooh.
Move over, Tara Reid and Ian Ziering. It's time for David and Kelly. Okay.
You know, in a weird way, they could almost like be those genres. Like, very weird way.
Okay. All right. What about War Dog? Shark, minnow, or poop?
I think War Dog is a shark.
Another shark.
Yeah, so we are, you know what? We are suddenly, I think, informing ourselves as to who the power players in this game are. I think it's a question of whether or not they can keep it together in any which way, or if they know that they're each other's fellow sharks and, you know, there is a shark on shark violence situation here. But I think War Dog's a shark. I think he's actually been an extremely pleasant surprise this season because he does have that sort of hyperkinetic energy that you expect from his archetype. But at the same time, he's making a lot of great points and his word has value out there. I think he's been entertaining. I think he's been one of the livelier people on the season and it's actually making things happen. It seems like he's one of the only people who can say something and it actually results in action. So I like it.
Okay. Lauren.
Minnow.
I think so. Okay. And then Rick Devins, also from Lesu.
Well, he's not going to like this, but I think he might be the poop, actually.
I might be the poop.
Okay, why?
I think so. But I think he's, as Aurora's insane analogy went off the rails, I think he might be that added element in the sea that's messing with the poop, the minnows, the poop, the pH balance, and the sharks here. Mm-hmm. He's like that. He might be that fourth element now, you know? The unknown, whatever, God knows what she was talking about.
We don't know. Okay. What about Aurora?
I feel like she's a shark in real life, but I feel like she has gone to she's hit the poop oofs.
Yeah, right. I thought she had shark upside coming out of last week. But this week, I think that she could be left in poop city.
She took a strange time to, it's like she was the tag along to that group. Then they voted out her one true ally. And then she dug her heels in as like a more serious member of the group. It is bizarre. Her timing on the whole thing seemed really off. And her indignant behavior at this tribal, I do not like where she stands in this game anymore. It's hard to see her having the social currency to pull off any sort of necessary move. Who is going to listen to her at this point?
Yeah. Ron Clark.
I think he is poop.
I think he's poop too. Oh, no.
I think he's a shark in real life. Shark turned poop.
Yeah.
A tale as old as time.
I was going to say in the game, I think he's a shark pretending to be a minnow now.
Yes.
Or pretending to be poop.
Well, I think he's like a shark that's going to come to an untimely death. You know, he might still have shark like tendencies. Mm. He's just not going to eat anyone anymore.
Okay. All right. What about Julie?
I mean, I feel like she's a minnow in shark's clothing.
Minnow in shark's clothing.
Or shark in minnow's clothing. I don't see her at, well, it's hard to say. I mean, she's going for it at this point, right? She's taking her fate in her own hands. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to see her as anything but a number at this point. You know, it's never a great move to pull the old Cochrane and go from, you know, bottom of your alliance to bottom of someone else's alliance. That rarely turns out well for people.
Mm-hmm. Victoria.
I think she's a shark.
Shark.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that she's been a minnow who ends up sort of like on the right side of the numbers. Like she keeps swimming to safety.
Well, I see what you're saying. And I think she is kind of going with the tide, so to speak.
She was a shark to Aubrey.
Yes, in a minnowy sense, but I really do enjoy her gameplay. I would love to see a Victoria type of character on every season. Mm-hmm. It's fun to watch someone who, you know, no strings attached, rolling with the punches, and is willing to be just savage to anybody. I like it. I thought she was hilarious at this tribal. I loved how she pulled the parachute on her alliance so fast, mm-hmm. and is just, whoops, here I am. Okay, so what's the plan, guys? As if she had been aligned with them the whole mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
I thought it was a classic move. And I think the fact that she got away with it says more than anything. Because if I was in that other group, I'd be like, go back over with Julia, thank you very much, mm-hmm. and Aurora, go sit down. And instead, they were like, yeah, okay, Victoria's with us. I could tell that, you know?
Yeah.
Thought it was funny.
Victoria would be a phenomenal Big Brother player. I don't know if this ultimately, the strategy works as well on Survivor, but I mean, she is like a June Song level floater, and I mean that in a positive.
Well, I like the fact that you would never see her coming. You know, she has one of those packages that seems unassuming enough. So I think, you know, her game is very dangerous in that sense, because if you trust her, it's going to be at your own demise.
Right. But if this was a Big Brother season, it's like, okay, whoever's the HOH, you know, she's up there in the bedroom. She's talking about it. She's in their ear about who they should put up on the block. She's never considered for somebody who should be going up on the block. In Survivor, it's hard to always be in the numbers, especially when it's a season that's having a lot of shifts like this.
I agree, but I do think she's also game to be adaptable to what's going on. And so far, she has not found herself out of the numbers. So I think at least you have to credit her for reading the situation. And she has found a way thus far to be in the majority, whether or not she can maintain that, or if she develops a reputation for being, you know, a little wormy, is possible here. But I do like her willingness to do whatever it takes with whoever it takes. You know, she's paying homage to the, you know, voting block sense, to the whatever, God knows what other terms were coined around that
trust
time.
Trust cluster. Sure.
Yes. Okay. She will roll with that.
All right. And what about Gavin?
I feel like, unfortunately, I feel like Gavin is a minnow here. And I think he's going to be, unless he pulls something really out of his hat, in short order, I think he is on the chopping block, and I think he's going to be really disappointed in his own game. I think he has all the potential in the world to be a good player. I don't really think we're seeing it realized, but he's still in there. He also seems willing, so I wouldn't rule him out, but I think he finds himself in a place now where it's going to be very hard to dictate his own destiny in the game.
Yeah, Gavin, I thought was trying to have his shark moment this week, where that he came in and was like, from the get go, all right, my next move is going to be, we should go after David Wright. And I actually think that his plan would have worked, but we saw the moment where he talks to Kelly and War Dog and Lauren. And I was wondering that if maybe some of them had been fans of the Summer of Stein after they made this pact.
I'm ready to take this six, you know, a new alliance to the end.
Ride or die.
On it every way.
Ride or die.
Yeah.
I remember all my ride or dies from the beginning. I see who flip-flops. I see who comes back when the times are good. I see who leaves when the times are bad.
Yeah, and they were ready to be ride or dies with Gavin. But then we saw Julia then in her confessional talk about, like, boy, this Lesu 3, I don't want to work with them anymore.
Yeah, no one likes a flip-flopper, so you might be right.
Yeah, but I thought that he came in. And it was like, hey, we voted together last night. Let's vote together again. And I thought that it was Juliet that for some reason, even though there were four people from original comma that flipped, she couldn't work with those numbers of that Lesu 3. That was too big of a threat for her at the final 11.
Which is incredibly bizarre if you roll back her actions even further, when she could have voted out Lauren or Kelly instead of Joe. and then her numbers would have been even more fortified, and this wouldn't have even been an issue. And right, she still should have had a majority. And this week is like one of the ultimate lessons in Survivor, and I don't see how we can be 38 seasons in and people are still making this mistake. You need to make everyone feel like they are involved, they are being heard, they are part of the plan. When you exclude people or don't give them information or don't, they don't feel like you're listening to them, what happened with Julie is going to happen every single time. And this was just a complete failure from the other four to not lock those votes out. And I agree. I think they should have just gone. Once you choose the direction, go with the direction. It seemed very bizarre to then crawl back to the other ones, be like, hey, nothing happened here. We're still good. We're back to the original tribe. You're not still good. So then you had created a different numbers advantage. So roll with that. Mm-hmm. But they weren't content to do that either. You know, yeah. they needed to pick a lane and stay in it. That was the problem. Way too wishy-washy.
Yeah. And back in Survivor Kageon, that Tony was able to do this a couple times where he and Wu were able to, you know, flip away from his alliance with Trish and with Cass and then come back and then work things out. But he had Trish, who was able to sort of, you know, smooth things over with people when he flipped away from his allies and then came back, and Trish was the person who was going to iron everything out. And so we had these comma people who flipped away from Ron and Julia, but there was no person who was there to sort of make everything right with Ron and Julie. And that, even though I think they were going to vote with them, Julie just still never felt good about it and was ready to jump ship away from this new reformed alliance as soon as they got the tribal council.
Yeah, you're totally right. They needed the fixer. And I think, as you know, we all know by now, Trish was really integral to Tony's game, and Tony played a one in a million game that it would be impossible to replicate. And she thought she would beat him in the end because she was the voice of reason and she was fixing all these problems, but she wasn't realizing how explosive it was reading for him and how dynamic it was reading. But no one can really pull that off because it was an insane strategy. It was not of sound mind and body, and she helped enable his ability to do that. So I completely agree with you, but they floated way off script. I mean, it seemed almost as if they had no plan. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes so, let's just say that even they were going to do what they did last week and everything had been the same to that point. Why not just vote out David or Devins then and just sort of weaken Ron and Eric that way, rather than take one of them out directly and say, hey, I'm not going after our original alliance. I'm our original alliance to the end. I'm just taking out your parachutes. That mm-hmm. would have been a way to do it as well. But they made a boldly aggressive move and then immediately backpedaled it.
Yeah. Okay. Eric, let me give you this question. This is from Steven in South Carolina. Has a great question for Eric Stein.
Hey, Rob and Eric. This is Steven from South Carolina. So if Rick Devins is viewed on the island as a person who won't win the game because they came back from Extinction Island, whether that's the case or not, whether only a few people believe it, could Rick use this to his advantage, like a la Mike White from last season, even though he hadn't seen that yet? Mike White was viewed as a goat because of his celebrity status and his fame and fortune. And he used this to gain a ton of power and trust with people because everybody wanted to go to the end with him. So if everybody wants to go to the end with Rick because they see him as a goat, could Rick use all of this and gain a ton of power and almost control every vote, just like Mike White did on the last, what, from the final seven on? And if Rick Devins is the new Mike White, we use his first and last name. Rob, will you review newscasts from Rick Devins on News AF and insult his career? Oh yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Love the podcast.
Was this actually Mike White calling up to leave this voicemail message? What emoji do you think Rick Devins would be?
Well, according to him, we know which one.
Yeah. You know, I don't necessarily know if that was the case where people were saying, hey, let me take Mike White to the end because he has fame and fortune. And so I think that might be undercutting Mike's game from last season. But that's for another story. But Eric, do you think that Rick is leaning into this enough of like, hey, take me to the end. I can't win.
Yeah, I actually, if I were Rick, I would definitely do that. I would be all throw my hands in the air. Hey, guys, I already lost. I suck. I have no idea what I'm doing here. I'm no threat to anyone. I'm just enjoying my second shot at this. Use me however you want. I'm a mercenary here. And I think he's kind of doing it, but I would lean into it even more. However, if I was a player in the game, I would sniff this out from a mile away. And I would also know that he spent time. As soon as I saw that the Edge of Extinction players were on the jury, that would not fly for me. If he presented that strategy to me, I'd be like, come on, man, you have all the votes of all of the Edge of Extinction players.
Right.
However, if I were him, I would still try it. So,
okay. I think it's a good move. And I don't know if people are thinking about this. You know, it's hard to get a sense. We can sort of, when we see the secret scenes, get a little more insight into what people are saying. But no secret scenes this week on the one day episode.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Not enough time. They, you know, basically, I mean,
there's no like Joe Anglim climbing a tree or anything like that.
No, there was no time for it. I mean, the way that historically that these and when I say that, it means that I don't know from new seasons, but I know from when I played in the 1900s. But in the 3-day episode cycle, you know, you sort of like have the day where there is a reward challenge and a day where you're filming a lot of interviews and a day where you are then getting ready for the immunity challenge and then tribal council. So that there was no in between day where they filmed a lot of interviews for this episode.
Right. Totally makes sense.
Okay. Eric, before we go any further, I want to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, and those are our friends who bring us Open Fit. This is something new that makes it even easier to never miss a sweat session. Eric, now you never miss a sweat session, right?
Yeah, I don't even need to work out.
Yeah. Lose the commute to the gym. Let the workouts come to you just like I do every day in my garage. Open Fit takes all the complexity out of losing weight and getting fit. It's a brand new, super simple streaming service that allows you to work out from the comfort of your living room or your garage if you're like me in as little as 10 minutes a day. Everybody's body is different, and Open Fit gets that, which is why it's personalized to your needs with a custom tailored original series of content. They've got amazing trainers and classes. Open Fit classes are led by some of the most effective and engaging trainers in the world. Sculpt your body with Andrea Rogers, founder of the worldwide sensation Extendbar, or get into crazy good shape with Hunter McIntyre, named one of Sports Illustrated's top 50 fittest athletes. Eric, were you right there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually quite excited by this because I want to see what they have for middle-aged doughy men, since they have something for everyone.
A lot. It's super simple. You can access it anywhere, anytime on your computer, your web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, and Roku. And they've got results that you could see where you could lose up to 15 pounds in just the first 30 days. Flatten your abs, shape your body, look and feel great. Open Fit is going to change the way that you work out. And with the promo code Rob, you can join us on an Open Fit journey personalized for you. Again, use my promo code Rob and start using Open Fit for your journey to a healthier life right now. During the Open Fit 30-day challenge, our listeners get a special extended 30-day free trial membership to Open Fit. That's about as long as Reem's going to be on the Edge of Extinction, Eric.
I love it. Imagine she had this out here. She'd be so toned by the end.
Yeah. A special extended 30-day free trial membership to Open Fit, where you can lose up to 15 pounds in 30 days when you text the word Rob to 30-30-30. You'll get full access to Open Fit, all the workouts and nutritional information totally free. Again, just text Rob to 30-30-30. Okay. Eric, let's get back to the voicemails and let's check in with an old friend. Let's check in with Gene Thomas, hear what he has to say about the Comet Tribe.
Hello, this is Jean-Thomas from Montreal. So how perfect would it be if zero member of Camastrong actually makes it to the loved one visit?
That would be quite poetic.
I don't know if that will be possible. I think that some of them... Numerically speaking, I think that, so we have a double episode coming up this week where two people are going to go home in this week's episode. By my calculations, I think we're still going to have another week or two until we get to the loved ones. So, I don't know. It might be next week. It might be the week after where we get to the loved ones.
Yeah, so unfortunately, it does seem that some of them will make it. But I mean, this has been covered ad nauseum. But it's like people playing for the jury on Big Brother. I mean, pathetic. Who cares? I mean, it's 39 days. You'll see them afterwards. It's like, in fact, I believe I've told this story before, but I think it is relevant here. I did win a phone call from home on my season of Big Brother, and I gave it away. And I had told my family ahead of time that even though that could be as many as 100 days, that I under no way, shape or form wanted to hear one word from them. I didn't want to take myself out of the game. I knew they were fine. I knew I was fine. And I can't for the life of me imagine why this is important to people in this experience. You'll see them soon enough, and let alone to play for that as a goal is really embarrassing. And I'm glad that they poked the hole in that and let the air out of the balloon here. So hopefully we don't need to hear this again in future seasons, because I mean, that's just laughable.
Right. And if somebody is telling you just hang in there for the merge, for the family visit, it usually means you're getting a bad deal. Like, that
absolutely
should be a tell. Yeah,
absolutely. That's been one of the
let's just all make it to jury. You're getting screwed.
Yeah, that's it. I agree. Is it so hard for them to just say to the end? You know, I always said that what people should do is when they're hanging out by the fire, right? Not a game talk. You say something very vague and encouraging, like, boy, this is what I was dreaming of when I came out here. If one of us can be there at the end, or a bunch of us can be there together at the end, this is exactly what I was hoping for. I hope for so many more nights like this. Then you've promised no one anything. You have not guaranteed anything. You're not going to have to go back on your word. And you've still reassured the people that you're sitting there with. I don't understand why anybody would be like, you're in my final 10, my friend.
My final 10? What? Yeah,
it's a little too specific. Or dish out 7 final 3 deals. That's also not good gameplay, right? Mm-hmm. Why can't you just say to your people, like, hey, let's ride this out and do this thing. I'm going to be happy as long as any of us win.
Okay. Great. This is good stuff. Good stuff from Eric Stein. Let me give you this question here from Dan.
Hey, guys. This is Dan from New York. So I think a lot of Survivor fans will point to the Galoo tribe for having the biggest meltdown post-merge. And that started out when they voted out Eric Cardona. Now, Kama is having a similar trajectory, all starting from voting out Eric Haifman. So, Eric Stein, can Kama take the mantle from Galoo for having the biggest tribe meltdown? And what is it about voting out an Eric that causes a tribe to self-combust?
All right, should you never vote out an Eric from your tribe? Is that really the takeaway?
I don't know if you saw this, but right before we recorded the podcast, someone had posted on Twitter about Eric having a real tough time on the edge, and no joking involved. I thought he was talking about me, and I got all choked up, and I was like, oh man, I have been a little on the edge lately. This is true. So I don't know. Maybe that's it. The Erics are just a real volatile cog in these things. And once they go, it goes. Was that Dan the War Dog De Silva from New York?
I don't think so.
As a sounds different.
Yeah, I wanted to know, is it always a bad idea generally to vote Eric out of the tribe?
You know, Dan De Silva, apparently he's right around my age, and it lists his hometown as one town over from where I grew up as mm-hmm. well. This is a pretty dynamic CBS reality pair right here. This could be my amazing race partner, possibly.
Maybe.
Hometown friends.
Maybe. A pairing of War Dog and Dino the dog.
Yeah, exactly. War Dog and the puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the exact opposite of a war dog? Because that's what I am.
I guess that you are a peace cat.
Yeah. Peace cat, peace puppy.
Peace cat, Eric Stein.
Yeah, meek nobody.
Yeah, Peace Cat I think would play well on social media.
I do like that, but I am very allergic to Peace Cat. Mm-hmm. So Could be dangerous.
So I was listening to Eric out there on the edge, and he gave us a clip that I thought I meant to open the show with this clip from Eric.
Today's going to suck.
That's probably what everyone is thinking when they go to their podcast feed and see that it's a non-survivor on the episode today.
Yes.
This is going to suck.
Yes. We opened the scene on the edge of extinction this week with Eric's sad story about what was going on. And we get sort of Eric's POV on things.
Today's going to suck.
When you read that sign, and no disrespect to everyone else here, but it doesn't hit as hard when you're the second, third, fourth, fifth person. So when I showed up here, I was just in the corner just crying.
Now, did Eric know today was going to suck because he knew that Reem was going to tell the story again about when she was the first person to get there and read the sign?
Yeah, he's probably heard it four times already since getting there.
Oh, my God. She's going to tell the story again about the sign. She was the only one here. Nobody had it as hard as her. It's going to say again.
I mean, he might be feeling a little less than when he arrived due to Chris's Underwood situation, possibly as well. So he might be feeling, you know, really diminished and shrunken down on the edge now.
No, absolutely not. That was not my takeaway listening to Eric talk about this, because listen how inspired Eric was when he looked at Chris.
Chris comes back with a really big stingray, and I'm thinking, there's a story here for me to tell my kids.
Whoa.
Kids, it was me, Chris Underwood, Joe, and a big stingray. And the rest is island folklore. What happens on the island stays on the island.
Kids, sit down for this one. I got to tell you about Chris Underwood's huge stingray.
I'm envisioning kind of like a How I Met Your Mother, like Bob Saget's narrating. It's like, kids.
Did I ever tell you about the time that I saw Chris Underwood's huge stingray?
Boy, Chris has come out of this. He didn't realize he did play the perfect game. It was just for his rest of his life outside of this.
Yeah. I know that Reem was impressed.
Wow, Chris. Wow.
That's what all of the 500 past survivors will be saying at these charity events as well.
Wow, Chris. Wow.
All right. All right. Eric, since we're talking about extinction, let me play you this question. This is from Caleb from Oklahoma City. Here is Caleb.
Hi, Rob and Eric. This is Caleb from Oklahoma City. This week on Edge of Extinction, we hear Eric talking about how in the game of Survivor, everything's going so fast, but that when you get to the edge of extinction, everything just slows down. And we often hear how Survivor is a sprint versus Big Brother, which is a relay race. So, is the edge of extinction pretty much just the Survivor version of the Big Brother house? Also, how can we get Reem into the actual Big Brother house? Thanks.
All right, Peace Cat, tell me, is the edge of extinction a lot like the Big Brother house?
Oh, man. Yeah, survivors are finally feeling what it's like to live a day in the Big Brother house. It is torture all day, every day. I have done very little with my life. I mean, I've taken full years where all I did was watch TV and do nothing with my time. I thought I was the most cut out for the boredom as anyone humanly possible. And let me tell you, it is torturously boring and you have nothing to do. And it's actually a big part of why people make mistakes in the game, because you have nothing to pass the time. It crawls by. That's why people sleep all day long on Big Brother, because there's nothing else to do. So I do. Of course, it's one big extension and even the build off of that. I mean, the edge of extinction, Big Brother, it carries on into the rest of your life. You know, it's just one slow grind for the last decade.
Should the Big Brother house have a mast in the backyard?
Oh, yeah. There is. I think there's. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's actually amazing to think that more people through the years have not hit the red emergency button to excuse themselves from the Big Brother house. Once your name goes, you see, in that regard, and I personally would never leave the Edge of Extinction. I mean, it's 39 days. Isn't it a great story? Isn't it a great experience regardless of whether or not you win the game? So it's just kind of unsportsmanlike to leave. That mm-hmm. being said, if you're Wendy or Keith, you don't have, you know, a chance in hell. So you may as well just go home. I mean, I feel like that should happen on Big Brother more often. You look around, say, nope, this isn't working for me. Hit the buzzer and just call it a day.
Yeah. Well, I think on Big Brother, well, certainly in the beginning of the game, you know, you have a stipend. So, I mean, you are being paid to be there. I don't know what the Survivor payout structure is on the Edge of Extinction.
Well, some people on Survivor actually have lives back home. But, you know, if
you don't get to go home.
Well, that's just it. That's exactly what I was going to say. But you're still there anyway. But I could see why you might feel like you have something to get back to. If you're on Big Brother, you have nowhere to live otherwise. So you want to stay for all 100 days. Otherwise, you just go back to the streets, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Eric, Matt on Twitter wants to know from you, would you raise the mass on Extinction if Gallagher showed up to do a special celebrity performance? Would that be what makes you ultimately leave the Edge of Extinction?
What a life you lead here in the Big Brother house.
Edge of Extinction. Are you kidding me? That would be the greatest entertainment I've ever had.
Gallagher would slay on the Edge of Extinction.
Oh, yeah, think of all the coconuts.
Yes. I mean, that would be a great reward for the survivors to have Gallagher come to the Edge of Extinction. He's going to bring a lot of fruit that's going to get splashed onto you.
And so, wait till you see Chris Underwood's act and his mallet.
No.
What a life you lead here in the Big Brother house.
For the Survivor fans who don't know what we're talking about, during Celebrity Big Brother this season, there was a competition where Big Brother brought the legendary, iconic comedian Gallagher to perform a comedy show in the backyard.
Yes, and I would use the term comedy very loosely, and I think it was pretty safe to say that he did not know where he was at the time.
He said he knew he was in the Big Brother house.
What a life you lead here in the Big Brother house.
You're right. I take that back. He obviously was very certain of his surroundings.
Okay. Eric, I've got some other clips from the episode. So David Wright, do you think is David Wright getting a big head out there as a Survivor returning player? Has David Wright gone full third person here during Survivor season 38?
Rick and I voted differently because he wasn't willing to see my side of it, the right side of it.
What do you think? Was that full? Third person?
Yeah, the right side t-shirts are probably being printed up as we speak. That's probably going to be his next sitcom script. I like it. Devins and David Wright starring in The Right Side.
The Right Side? What's the plot?
I don't know. Cochran will write it. It'll be great.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, what would be the plot? This is some sort of buddy comedy, undoubtedly.
Mm-hmm. That they meet on a plane somewhere and they become roommates.
Yeah, it sounds painful.
Okay. Gavin ended up winning the reward challenge or the immunity challenge and was very happy to tell us about where he would be or what he was thinking about when he won.
I can already see my mom and dad and my wife and my brother just saying, come on, a little bit farther.
No, was Gavin really just going a long way to do his Borat impression?
And my wife.
My wife was telling me. Wouldn't that be something if it turned out that he was playing the game under an alter ego?
Okay. All right. We've got some more questions for Eric Stein. Let me thank one other sponsor here before we get into the truly ludicrous here with Eric Stein. Eric Stein is spoken for, but Eric, in your younger days when you were out there in the dating pool, did you ever get on any of these dating apps, Eric?
Oh yeah, that's how I met my girlfriend.
Oh, and it's lonely out there, right?
It is. You need some people on your team.
You need some people on your team, and that's where the people at Ship come in. Because if you are thinking about raising the mast on being out there dating, well, think again. It's time to get out there on Ship, because what Ship does is they allow you to bring in all of your trusted advisors into your crew, and you could be going along there on your group chat as you're scrolling through and finding people that you might find appealing, or you could also have people who are in your crew picking out people for you, just like I do all the time for Adam Klein.
This is actually a genius idea. I absolutely love this. This is what people are doing out there anyway in their own group chats, except they had no way of sharing the recommendation. You couldn't port someone over into someone else's phone and say, hey, they'd be great for you. Now you can. I love it. But you got to make sure your alliance is on your side, giving you good information here.
Right. Don't invite anybody into your crew that is going to be giving you bad advice. That is why I am a great person in Adam Klein's crew. And I only pick the best people. If you want to get with Mr. Adam Klein, you got to go through me, ladies. Okay. Dating is more fun when you do it with friends. Download Ship for free at getship.com/RHAP. That's getshippede.com/RHAP. That's getshipped.com/RHAP, and start today. Okay. Eric, let me have this question for you. Here's our good friend Felipe in Boston has a question for you. With next week looking like an episode of Survivor where we're going to have two tribal councils.
Hey, Rob and Eric. This is Felipe from Boston. Maybe a trigger warning for Eric, but I want to talk about potentially a double vote out or a double eviction for Survivor. Because Big Brother does this, and it's like a big event usually. And it speeds up the game. What if Survivor were to do like a double? I know they've done it in the past, but like more of a consistent double vote out to speed things along and get us with a shorter finale. What do you guys think? And have a nice day.
Okay. So, Eric, I presume that this week we are going to have a tribal council in like the first 30 minutes and then another tribal council that comes at the end of the episode. And basically, it's going to be sort of like two truncated episodes back to back in one night. But what about the idea? And I know they've done it in the past in some ways, but they go to that first tribal council and then spring it on them. Okay, it's going to be a second tribal council, but where it's been very yada yada in terms of that, like, you know, that happens at 8:45 and at 8:55, they're voting another person out. What if, like a Big Brother double eviction night, we sort of like let the week play out a little bit more at tribal council?
Yeah, I think I like it. I would love to see some of the early part of the game fast forward. And I know that would stink for the cast members that don't last long onto the show. But I've always felt that both of these shows, like they allocate the doubles and the fast forwarded episodes in the wrong way. We see so much of the early game on Big Brother. I'd love to see, doubles the first few weeks. Let's get to the people we actually care about. And that's where you should be speeding up the game. Instead, they always speed up the game and change the schedule and fast forward things way later in the game when there's actually something going on that you care about. So for me, I'd love to see some of those, pre-merge tribals. I think that would be great. I mean, let's just get on with it, especially when you're in the pagoging phase of the game or you're in a smaller tribe and it's very obvious that there are two people on the outs. Let's just go get it over with. We don't need two episodes to
let's
to
go. Do that.
That's right.
Because I just feel like that with what we're talking about from the beginning of this podcast, with the way that the game is going. So hypothetically, all right, we have our first tribal council. First boot happens at, 840 or 835. And then Jeff sort of reveals like, and guess what? We're voting somebody else out again tonight. And then, but sort of like, let's have the live tribal council. Let people strategize. Don't give them a heads up during the day that it's coming so they can like pick out two people that they're going to vote out. Like truly blindside them. Don't do it every single season so they can't prepare for it. And I think that you would have some really good TV happening where if Survivor wanted to recreate what happened in this episode this past week, that I think that this would be a really organic way to do that.
Yeah, I do like that. And I think it allows for some really swift moves because you don't need to explain yourself. You don't need to answer questions for 3 days. So if you want to make a big move, that could be a really great time to do that. We do see that on Big Brother sometimes. A perfect example would be Andy during a double elimination, completely flipped the game and just completely bamboozled people. I would love that. I'd love to give people the opportunity to really put the pressure on. And do they take the easy way out or do they really go for something big in that moment and let it fold out. I like that. It's giving structure to what we were talking about before. If they're going to be up and moving and it's going to be fluid anyway, well then say, hey, listen guys, here, we actually are going to play some game while we're sitting right here. I like it.
So they could do the immunity challenge, and the immunity challenge could be a quiz or whatever. And that's how they've done it in the past. But instead of going right from, all right, so David Wright wins immunity in the quiz. All right, we're going to vote. We're going to give you a few minutes to talk amongst yourselves about who should be voted out. Or Jeff could lead the discussion of Devins, who do you think it should be tonight? And then let the discussion unfold from there. I think that would be very fun.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. And I like if we could add a mechanism where people kind of have to own their stuff in the public forum, even better. I like that. Go straight down the line and say, here's your chance to plead your case. It's now or never. And see what people do in that moment, what they're willing to give up to protect themselves and what big moves might unfold in the moment. I think that would be really electric and exciting. Unfortunately for us, although the double elimination episode earlier in the season turned out to be a pleasant surprise, the way that these things normally tend to go, it does make me quite worried for Aurora and Gavin in this episode.
That's sort of the chalk pick on in terms of that. So yeah, this does feel like this was a double episode that was baked into the schedule. And then this first tribal council was just so crazy that it ended up being its own episode. So I know that we're getting these two tribal councils, but yeah, I am with you, Ed, that if I had to guess, I think that the chalk picks are Aurora and Gavin to go out and potentially Victoria.
Right. And to what you're saying, then what will be the first half of this episode was intended to be the second half of the previous episode. So therefore, they will not have a lot of footage that will inform that tribal in the first place. So by default, that is automatically going to be shorter. So it's as good a time as any, therefore, to fast forward, an episode as well.
Yeah. So we will see this upcoming Wednesday night. Eric, let me play this question for you. And this is from Eric H. has a question for you about Survivor social media. And I'm interested to know how closely you follow this.
Twitter press conferences. Are we in favor of them? Are we liking the Twitter and all the possible revisionist history being on there by, I would say, big on Julia this season and Victoria? And speaking of both of them, they both kind of confirmed, and going into a different question here, they both kind of confirmed that for sure they knew it. Like, they knew that Julia was going to be the vote. So if it was that obvious, does it make it? And I know the rule about the Nidals is better to play it and get no votes than to not play it and get votes, obviously. But does this make this now by David, even though he got one vote, a bad idol player? Or I guess Rick. So whoever, either one, is it a bad idol play?
Okay. Let's focus on the first part of it. Eric, this is something I feel like I don't know what your opinion is on it, and I'm curious to know. How do you feel about the Survivor players taking to Twitter and then answering any unanswered questions that viewers have about the episodes?
I don't particularly like it because I am in the camp where I think that no matter how hard they're trying to be in the moment or speak only to what the viewers know, it is always going to be slightly tinged with they know the outcome of the season and who they are close with in real life and information that they have that we do not. So I understand where they're coming from wanting to paint a more vivid picture, or when better to engage the fans than while the show is airing, because we know the 15 minutes are ticking. However, I think this works better if you could do it like in a live format, or maybe they could sort of do interviews after the fact about something that happened at the time and then air them now. So the feelings are in the moment. But when you are now going out there and putting out your feelings about what you're seeing in the episode, I'm not concerned about, you know, them trying to reimagine the edit or tell their own story. That's perfectly fine. It's just, I do think it's a slippery slope where if you really want to read into it, and we know that most of our level of fandom does really want to read into it, there probably is something that you can take away from these exchanges. And I'm surprised that the show is so comfortable with everyone talking so freely about it. They certainly have not been in the past, at least as far as I know.
It really ebbs and flows the way that CBS publicity has handled it, where, you know, you have seasons where it's really out of control, like Kagyan, then they rein it back in San Juan del Sur. I feel like then there was a point where it sort of got out of control again. And then I feel like at one of the recent seasons, it was kind of reined back in. But now the toothpaste is like all the way out of the tube. And it seems like that it's a free for all again.
Yeah, it's kind of like a watch along or like a DVD commentary, one of David Wright's DVDs, perhaps, mm-hmm. you know, where you're watching back and engaging along the way. So I understand like the director's cut, why that would be interesting, but not as it's happening, because it's giving away too much. I do not like it. And it also seems, not for nothing, but a little defensive of the players, you know, not that I have not been defensive about my game, but you know, I don't think it's always the best look for them. Better to laugh along with it and say, you got me guys, or, oh man, that was so exciting to watch, or crazy to relive it, without getting into the weeds on this. I do not like it. And to the second point of the question, I actually don't think this was a bad idol play by them. I think it accomplished two things. Like they said, it clears the deck. No questions asked. They can move forward in a cleaner manner, both with each other and anybody else who might have wondered. And when it's that chaotic, if I'm David Wright, I'm not taking any chances. I mean, when someone has point blank told you, you are on the chopping block, whether it's true or not, or whether or not you think it's resolved itself in a certain way, I'm not going home that night. I'll figure it out the next day or go find another idol.
Okay. Eric, do you think that another idol will be hidden in play this week?
Hard to say, right? Because is this considered an island idol, or is this a special one-time-only edge idol? What do you think?
I think that it is just considered an idol, and I think that I don't have the numbers to back this up in front of me, but I kind of feel like that three is a number that they're comfortable with in terms of idols in the game at this particular point in time. And so I do suspect that there will be another idol hidden.
Yeah, I actually inclined to believe as well. I think that they have seen that the two idol holders are sort of sitting on them as well. So I think they'd want to promote idol play ideally, although I would give it probably like a 93% chance that Kelly is the one who ends up with it anyway.
Ooh, Kelly with two idols.
Yes. I mean, just like, for example, how when she was running a challenge the last time around, it just magically appeared in her box when she ran past it. Mm-hmm. It's just so convenient.
Yeah. Okay. Eric, would you like a question that I have not screened that has come in since we started recording this podcast?
Yes, yes, I like it. Let's okay. fly by
let's,
the seat
let's
of our
roll
pants
the
here.
Dice with Jason Curtis Rivera.
What's up, Rob and Eric? It's Jason Curtis Rivera. And I got a question that might be a little bit in the weeds.
Oh, boy.
But I think a couple of my ride or dies, such as yourselves, will be able to break it down. Now, usually, Survivor production will seat alliances together at Tribal Council.
Okay.
For example, in Survivor South Pacific, Cochrane was sat right in between the two big alliances at the merge, so that, in theory, if either alliance wanted to whisper in his ear, they could have.
Jason's really sticking to the Pauly Calafiore bit.
Yeah, it's Pauly meets a young Casey Kasem with the cadence. I like it.
But at this tribal, the alliances were all over the place. Lauren and Kelly Wentworth were separated by Victoria. Ron and Julie were all the way to one side, while Gavin, Aurora, and Julia were all the way to the other. Do you think Survivor Production is intentionally placing alliances not together so that we can have these live tribal councils? Or do you think I should take off my tinfoil hat? Stay crushing it, Jason Curtis Rivera.
Is that possible, Eric? Are they spreading out alliances so that people have to get up and talk to their allies?
Yeah, I don't want to pull back the curtain too far here, but let's just go with the assumption that TV producers will do anything to make the episode more entertaining. Mm-hmm. So I think that that is a not really much of a conspiracy theory. I think that there is intent behind most actions when you're creating a TV show. So if they think that the outcome might be a little obvious or that things might be getting stagnant, of course they're looking to shake it up and make it more exciting. So I think that that is well within the realm of possibility.
Okay. All right. Eric, let's take a question from another one of our listeners, and let's go out to Billy. Billy has a question for Eric.
Eric, my man, what is good, my dude? This is Billy, and I just wanted to know that we've seen Reem stand the test of time on Extinction Island, but do you think that she can have the ultimate test of reality star longevity? And do you think that we will be seeing her soon on the website cameo.com?
Eric, that's a good question. Do you think that Reem could go for another 15 minutes of fame as a person on the website cameo.com?
Oh, she's my number one from this cast. I could pay easily $18 for a message from her. That would be, I think she would be dynamite at that. But I think actually we could take this one step further. Why doesn't she follow in the footsteps of our ride or die, Pauly Calafiore? And she could be the next person to port herself over the MTV. She could be the first 46-year-old on the challenge.
I think
actually there's a few that are close.
Getting close. Kim Close. Yeah, that was a question for you about who could be on the MTV challenge. But yeah, Reem would be good on Cameo. But, you know, a lot of people on Cameo, they want like happy messages, happy birthday, happy anniversary. And you know, they're celebrating life's moments that I almost feel like that Reem would be an excellent person to deliver bad news to people.
Yes. All right. So let's go through this here. I know that you are in touch with your inner Reem here. So let's try a couple of occasions and see what you think her cameo might be. So let's just say it's my wedding anniversary. What sort of advice or well wishes might she have for me?
Dude, it's the same day of the year of your wedding. So I guess happy freaking anniversary, bro. But you know what? That the years go by and it doesn't always work out. So happy anniversary. Enjoy it while you got it, bro.
She's like, for your birthday, it's like big deal. I have one every year. I've had 46 of them.
All that happened over the last year was you didn't get divorced. So I guess
my birthday came first.
You know,
I already had this cake.
Half of all marriages stay together. So you really just, you know, flip a coin.
I think she'd be a good motivational speaker, though. She's like a, you know, get your head out of your butt type of person here. It's like, you know, get out there and do it.
Get out there and do it, because you know what? You could be out there that when I got to the edge of extinction on day three, there was nobody here. There was nobody there. I said a sign. I had to read the sign every day. And it wasn't the same whether you come here on day 3, 6, 9, 12. That was different. You weren't the first person here. That was me.
I just lost it because I was trying to get the situations like way and way more out of hand. And I was trying to imagine someone on the Shipt dating app referring her to Adam Klein. And I just went way too far down the path. And I stopped paying attention to what you were saying, trying to come up with the example. It got away
from me. Dude, Adam Klein. Seems like a nice guy. I would totally be in his crew. He's a nice guy, but if he gets out of line with me, I will drop kick him. Okay, I will drop kick him right now.
Yeah, she should go on Book Cameo for sure.
Eric, my man, what is good? Just want to say thank you. You're one of the real ones. You are a ride or die. You've never been flip-flopping. You've been here from the beginning. Thank you, Eric at Unlimited. Keep being awesome, my dude.
It's like a beef sauce. Yeah, she has the chops. She has the chops. I love it. I reconsider. I'm going to raise the price from $18. I think she can go for the full 30 for at least the first 2 weeks after the show. But get on there now while the getting's good.
We love cameo.com. Eric, I had a game that I was working on for you, and I couldn't bring myself to do it. It was called Is This Person on Cameo.com or Are They Deceased? Dead or on Cameo?
I mean, could there be some overlap possibly?
No,
as well?
No. I think, yeah, okay.
I think that would actually be harder than you think. I mean, the careers are dead of everyone involved. So it's a tough call. I actually recently I had a family member who was going through some things, and I actually considered whether or not a Cameo message for them might have actually brightened their day and cheered them up a little bit. So I wanted to like try and figure out who would be a good person to purchase, but without giving away what I was actually doing. So mm-hmm. In conversation, I started saying, hey, you know, did you enjoy this TV show or what did you think about that person? And the response was resounding disgust for all of the
options. They didn't want them.
Yeah, no. So
we love
thank
them.
Goodness, I didn't do 150 on iced tea. That would have been money poorly spent.
Yes. If anybody wants to play the Is This Person Dead or on Cameo game with Eric and I and see if you can stump us on Twitter, we would welcome that.
Yeah, not for nothing. I saw a BuzzFeed article recently, and it was, who said this, a spiritual guide or Kanye West? We played that game over the summer mm-hmm. with the Dalai Lama and Caitlin Herman. Mm-hmm. People they're onto our games, Rob. People yes. are listening.
Yes. If anybody wants a freebie on Is This Person Deceased or on Book Cameo, I'll give you the one to jump off from Ed Asner.
Oof.
I won't give you the answer.
I think I was in a movie with him after I was.
What do you mean you were in a movie with him?
I think I might have actually been, I can't remember who it was. It was someone like Ed Asner. I think he's dead.
Okay.
I don't know. We don't want to spoil it, though, so we'll leave it up to the listeners.
Yeah. You know who is the cheapest survivor to get a call from on Book Cameo? That, by my research.
How many dollars is this person going off at?
I found the survivor that you could get a cameo from for $10.
It's intriguing. I'm going to have to go... I don't know.
That was the cheapest I found. Believe it or not, Josh Canfield. Josh Canfield.
Really?
And let me tell you who's a steal here on Book Cameo is none other than the teen sensation Michael Yerger. This is a steal, Eric.
How much?
Just $15 for
wow.
Michael Yerger.
I would pay more for that.
Yes, I'll tell you, one's a steal. Almost $1 for every year of his life. Some of these, this one, he's wearing a winter jacket with a shirt open for Stephanie.
What's going on, Stephanie? Michael Yerger here. Just wanted to wish you a very Merry Christmas on behalf of your friend Melissa. Much love to you, and I hope you have a great holiday. Also, shouts out Chris.
Yeah, there you go.
A little low energy, I must say.
Low energy. Well, what do you want for $15?
Well, I don't know. What is good? You know, you get what you pay for. They're putting the money in my bank account. So, by the way, so it turns out it was actually Ernest Borgnine. I was in a film with, not Ed Asner.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody can be this high energy on Book Cameo.
What's up, Aaron? How are you? Happy day. Shine bright like a Frankie. I hope you're doing super duper well wherever you are. Listen, when life happens, we have to deal with it, right? Like,
All right. Let's get out of this. All right.
I didn't know if that was Tay Zonde or who I was listening to at first.
No, you know if it's Tay Zonde because it's always going to kick off with a...
Holy moly, bro.
All right, Eric, let me give you another question. This is one, I'd say Kieran from Maryland had a lot of questions for you. Here's another one that he had about another big CBS reality show coming up.
Hey, Robin, Eric, it's Kieran from Maryland. So next week, Amazing Race starts and three Survivor teams are on that team. Ruben and Laura, Corinne and Elijah, and Chris and Brett. My question to you, Eric, is among the three Survivor teams, which team are you rooting for?
Did Kieran correct Eliza to Elijah?
Yes, Elijah has.
I thought he said it right the first time, and then he corrected himself to Elijah.
Hey, Robin, Eric, it's Kieran from Maryland. So next week, Amazing Race starts, and three Survivor teams are on that team. Ruben and Laura, Corinne and Eliza. Elijah, my bad, and Chris.
Elijah and Moses. I have actually several questions that go along to follow up this question. Okay, the first one is he taking the Aaron Robertson approach to the wand off here? If you leave enough voicemails, then at least one will get played. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. Kieran, look, he's one of our most consistent callers.
I love Kieran. I just like the strategy involved there. I feel like it's a numbers game, and he's upping his chances. I really enjoyed that, and I appreciate it. Now... I am good friends with Elijah, as it were. So that's probably where my rooting hat will lie. I have a bit of a theory about this, which is a little hurtful because I am friends with several of the survivors and Big Brothers that will be on this season. But I just want to point something out here. Why is it that four of the iconic all-time great Amazing Race teams are on the show? And then some of the Big Brother and Survivor teams seem a little less physically imposing in a very physical game. And I wonder if this was cast with a little bit of home court advantage in mind to defend the crown. It kind of feels as if, you know, they put forth Kim Spradlin for if they were going to do the Survivor version of this, and then like had, you know, couple of wonky choices from the Amazing Race. You know, it's like I feel as if these are not the most physically imposing people that they could have selected from the other two shows.
Yeah. Okay. So you think that they were going for some sort of a Globetrotters versus Washington Generals to use a Amazing Race actual team?
Well, when you look at the field and you're going to handicap it, personal biases and friendships aside, the Amazing Race teams are looking pretty strong comparatively to some of the other teams in this race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but we'll see. I'm pulling for my friends to do well. And if not, at least make excellent television along the way. And even better, hopefully do both. And okay. Really, actually, I'd love my friends to win money because then they could buy me drinks.
That'd be great. Yes. Okay. All right. Let me see if I might be out of questions.
Yeah, I have a question for you here.
Yes.
So we heard this week on the Know-It-All, Stephen allude to the fact that you could have been on The Amazing Race. So I have two questions. Mm-hmm. One is, what sort of strategy would you take on the race? Do you think you'd play it straightforward or try and bring some of your Survivor gamesmanship? Do you think we'll see some sneaky strategies, sneaky along the way from the survivors? Or secondarily, if not Steven, who else would you have liked to play with from Survivor?
Okay, so hypothetically speaking, I would say that I would really try to, play the social game on The Amazing Race and really work very hard at making alliances. And, you know, basically any time that all the teams are together, I would, really do whatever I could to stir the pot. Because I think that I would go into The Amazing Race with sort of like zero illusions that I was going to win The Amazing Race. So I would just be out there trying to make good television. So I think I would just basically like be trying to say to basically to every other team, like, oh my God, like you guys are so cool. I can't believe what Nicole and Victor were saying about you guys on the plane. That was really uncalled for. We love you guys, Rupert and Laura and Art and JJ. You guys are the best, but that was messed up. And I would just be trying to stir the pot as much, because I really just like it when people fight on The Amazing Race.
Yeah, I think this is good because if you get like double U-turned, you're definitely screwed. And I think I would play very similarly because I can't drive stick. I get nauseous reading in the car. I'm a mediocre swimmer, can't ride a bike. I have a terrible sense of direction. I would be no asset other than socially or strategically. So like, you know, I think I would be really on the cusp of the like rules of the game, like trying to like hide people's passports and stuff. I remember back in the day, Eric Sanchez told me that on Amazing Race All-Stars, they used to call back the cab companies and cancel other teams' cabs. And then they had to make a rule that they weren't allowed to do that anymore. So, I feel like that's how I'd play.
Yeah, I think I'd really want to play on the margins on The Amazing Race. I think I would, like, if you're not having fun, then what the hell's the point? And if you're not going to be good TV.
How great is that, right? You call and order a cab, and then I call back, and I'm like, hi, I'm Rob. I just ordered a cab. Don't need it anymore. Bye.
Changed my mind. Yeah. And just in talking it through with Stephen Fishback, the problem is that we have a very similar skill set, I would think. And so I think that there would be a problem. So I would think that I would ideally prefer somebody that has kind of a different skill set than me that could do some more of the daredevil challenges that come up on The Amazing Race.
Yeah, I mean, Joey Amazing actually would be a nice compliment to your skill set, right? You know,
yes.
he could like put us on our shoulders while he does the physical tasks, right? Yes. And then you could guide the strategy.
So
I agree. I think you need a physical partner.
I think that would be better if you could have somebody else who was different enough from you. I think that two of the same is not necessarily good on The Amazing Race, unless like two of the same is like, jacked biathlete who can also, do choreography and puzzles.
Yeah, I would pay to see you in the choreography challenges. But I will say this, though. I think you might be selling yourself and you guys short as a potential team, because I think the one thing that is interesting about Amazing Race is you don't need to be the best. You just need to be not the worst. Mm-hmm. So I think you guys would have read your clues well. And if you just don't make a game crushing mistake at any time, you can stay in the mix. So as long as you're just, not the one to do something disastrously dumb each round, I think you're still in there. So I would have liked to see it.
Well, I think there would have been a lot of fighting, because just in a little bit of like talking it through about, okay, so who would do what? And I was particularly infuriated at one point when in talking about, so we have to bungee jump. Okay, who's going to do that? And because I don't want to bungee jump. And Steven said, well, I don't want to bungee jump either. And I said, well, he's like, you, so you have to do it. I said, well, why do I have to do it? And he said, well, do you know how bad that is for your brain to go bungee jumping? I could get CTE. And I was like, wait, what? Why is your brain so much more important than my brain?
Also, leave it to Steven to treat the amazing race like it's a full contact sport also.
It's very insulted that like, well, your brain isn't good for anything, so you take the CTE.
Yeah, really. I think there's also like there's not only that, but there's also like the implication that like he's going to be the one that needs to do like the smart challenges.
Yeah, so I went to Yale. My brain can't go bungee jumping. You went to state college.
The French translations, and you're off getting concussions on every leg.
Yeah. Listen, you could, get, that brain knocked around and still do what you do, podcast boy.
I think that if I were on The Amazing Race, I'd be the first ever contestant to never even make it to LAX. It's just they're like landed in Brazil, done with all the challenges, and I'm still driving around in Burbank somewhere. I like stop for In-N-Out, have a couple bathroom runs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, directions are not my strong suit.
Yeah.
I actually, many, many, many moons ago, had a brief interlude where it looked like for a hot minute that was a possibility for me as well. And I couldn't even put myself in that spot. It would have just been so, so bad. It would have been great.
Just so, so bad to do The Amazing Race.
Well, I would have loved it. I would never. I love traveling. I would love to, roll cheese down a hill somewhere or what have you. It's just I could not imagine someone less equipped to do well on the show than me.
Okay. Eric, do you have a take on the winner of The Edge of Extinction?
It's interesting. I keep going back and forth on this. And last week, obviously, it's a complete non-starter. But this week, I think it's feeling like Rick Devins again.
Yeah. No, I'm in. I think so.
What scenario unfolds in which he's getting eliminated anytime soon? And then he's playing in this sort of light and easy breezy manner. He's going to have the votes. And it's very, like it's representative of the season and the season twist. I mean, the only other person at this point who I guess I could talk myself into Julie probably. And that's starting to feel like those are the options to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been thinking similarly, but I'm not necessarily sure how we get there. Is it possible? Could Rick Devins get voted out again and come back again?
I think that is in the realm of possibility, but it would really depend on the type of challenge we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
It does look like the competitive field is going to be a far more treacherous one for the second return.
Right.
And it is interesting because we thought that this was by design to continue getting screen time for the returning players, but I don't think we've seen, we've barely seen Joe since he's been out there. There haven't been those hero moments where he built them a new shelter from scratch, using his swimming trunks and things along those lines. So it's kind of surprising to me. I don't know who is coming back. Who is your front runner at this point for who you expect to see back in the game?
I think Joe is the front runner to come back in. I guess Aubrey is probably second because she has the ability to practice in the competition.
Yeah, I'm going to give a hot take here. I should probably stop before this even comes out of my mouth, but I'm just going to say Joe and Aubrey, in my estimation, they didn't need to play again so soon. They didn't spark it for me this time around. Joe has kind of told us his story and what he's all about, and I like having that dynamic on the show. I am not anti-challenge beast. I'm not against hard workers. I see the role it plays in the show, but he didn't bring anything new this time around. And unfortunately for Aubrey, she was too much of a threat, and the returns are diminishing now a little bit. After Game Changers, I would have liked to see her have a little bit more time off before coming back to this game. They haven't excited me. Kelly and David have.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they've had more opportunity to do so. But I just thought it was a weird mix of people in the first place. I can see how they got themselves to David for sure. Kelly, great. She's on an upward trajectory. The other two, though, for me, not the most inspired picks.
Okay. Eric,
how do we see the rest of the season going? So we're on the same page. We think that it could be Gavin and Aurora out in a double episode. That gets us down to, what, 8 people left in the game. I think that's either Victoria there. That's the Lesu 5 plus Victoria, Ron, and Julie. What happens there?
You probably reignite the Kelly versus David, who's going to get who first. That feels to me like that.
You take out one more person there and then let that play out at 7.
Well, I think that that is what they should do. I'm not certain that that's where they would do, but that's how you get to someone like a Julie as a potential winner, is that they can't leave well enough alone and ultimately, you know, trade off pieces at that point, or one side gets the upper hand. Cause I think that that is the most likely scenario, is that now we've reversed field and now we're wiping out the commas here. And then I think the Lesus are going to be unable to finish the job. Mm-hmm. They're going to turn on each other. I mean, they're not going to want to be sitting next to each other in a final tribal. Although if I were them, I would shake on it and say, hey, let's just let the best person win and hash this out later, because it's the only way they're going to get there. But it feels like the type of season where the big dogs are going to trade blows back and forth, eliminate themselves, and someone is going to kind of just be left to pick up the pieces. And it's just going to be like, who's the lesser of evils? And, you know, Jeff does tip. Yeah, the lesser of all evils. I'm surprised that hasn't been an episode title yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff does tip his hand sometimes, right? And we haven't been hearing him raving about how we have a top 10 all-time winner this season. So that makes me worry for Kelly or David or someone along those lines. And I don't see Ron's path at this point. So I think the options, I could see Lauren winning still.
Okay. All right. Eric, I know a lot of people are waiting to get your opinion on. Did you want to touch on Lori Loughlin and her ongoing scandals?
Oh my God, what a debacle. I love it. I love it. I mean, do you blame her? I would probably do the same thing if I had money. You know, this is the most white collar crime you could ever possibly commit. You know, mm-hmm. I just thought the irony that this episode essentially existed in the Full House library, that's what put me over the edge here. At the time, I just was in utter disbelief to remember that there was an episode in which Jesse wanted to do this for Nikki and Alex. So it's like maybe she's somewhere, this incepted into her mind.
She got the idea
20 years later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or she saw a repeat, got a syndication check and said, hey, that's not a bad thought right here.
Okay. Eric, I'm looking at your Twitter. I loved your... I accomplished a ton today. Hashtag April Fools.
Yeah, it wasn't my most productive day of the year.
Okay. All right. Eric, anything else you want to talk about?
Oh, I do have one final question.
Yes.
We are recording this on National Grilled Cheese Day. Mm-hmm. I love a good grilled cheese. I was curious, though, what you think Fijian grilled cheese might be like. We've heard about the pizza. We just saw the Chinese food. Is this like an unmelted cheese sandwich? Has this been microwaved? How do we take this from the delicious treat that we are celebrating on this holiday into what they would serve after a reward challenge?
So the problem with Survivor food is that anything that needs to be at like a specific temperature is a problem. So grilled cheese, I think your mileage may vary. I think your best bet there might just be like, make some cheese sandwiches, let them sit out in the Fijian sun for, you know, an hour or two while they prep the challenge. And that might be the best bet, to make the grilled cheese and then have it sit out there. You know, it's humid. There's a lot of things that could potentially go wrong with any food item on Survivor.
What if Reem had to climb all of the stairs and what awaited her was a Fijian grilled cheese? How would she react to that?
Dude, I climbed all these steps. They told me it was National Grilled Cheese Day, and I got up to the top of the stairs, and they told me that it was going to be some sort of a grilled cheese, and I was like, does that mean there's going to be a grill that I have to make cheese with? And I found the sandwich, and let me just tell you, it was so good. Was the best sandwich that I've had in like 3 weeks, bro.
I love it. I love it. That's a Big Brother thing also. It's not just a Survivor thing, although there's no excuse on Big Brother. Like, we're just living in LA. The food should be perfectly fine, but they'll like take in a special treat, someone's birthday, but they just won't serve it to you for 5 hours. Mm-hmm. So you get, you know, like a In-N-Out burger, but it's just ice cold. You
it's
know,
been it's out.
Soggy. Yeah. it's been sitting in the storage room.
All right. The great Eric Stein at Eric Stein tweet. Eric, are you looking forward to we got the Amazing Race coming up, and then that's going to be the bridge to take us into Big Brother 21.
I do love the wall-to-wall CBS reality coverage. I've been waiting for the Amazing Race, but now that we're here, I love the fact that we don't need to go a long time in between seasons. It's something to keep us talking all year round, and I'm excited. I'm going to a premiere party Wednesday night
for Elijah.
For the show, for Elijah, the you know, the great character from the Bible, Elijah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we'll see how it goes. It'll okay. be fun.
All right. How was the reality takeover?
Oh, I got a lot of comments. Apparently, I am no longer known for Big Brother. I am known for the podcast and good. Summer of Stein.
Yes. Okay.
Quite surprising.
That's great. That's great.
Yes, I caught up with Billy Garcia from Reality Game Masters. That mm-hmm. was fun. Lots of interesting people there. I did meet some people for the first time, some nicer than others. It was mm-hmm. interesting.
Okay. All right. Looking forward to hearing more about that. All right. Eric Stein, great work. Always a thrill to get to catch up with you. Of course, we've got a lot more still to come this weekend. The tabulator, Kurt Clark, is going to be my guest on This Week in Survivor. We're going to talk with him about everything going on, and then we'll hear from Jordan Kalish on the This Week in Survivor History quiz. Jordan Kalish didn't steal any beers from you, did he?
No, he did give me a high five, though, I believe, or like a bit of a bro clap hug situation. Yeah, he was on fire. It was not difficult to envision the scenario that he described as unfolding.
All right. And then we will get back to Josh Wiggler and the Wiggle Room this week as the wand off rolls on. What wand offs will come in? Eric, do you have a prediction on the number one wand off this week?
Oh, that's actually a very good question. No, I'm excited to see it. I will say this, that just nothing to do with your question. It's just a complete non sequitur. But last season, I had in my mind already penned a John Morrison wand off to the tune of Hulk Hogan's theme song, Real American. Mm-hmm. And for weeks, I was waiting for him to get voted off so I could call in and sing a wrestling related wand off. And then I just completely forgot that week. It was very, very deflating.
Okay. All right. We'll have that coming up. And then Stephen Fishback and I are going to be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania with a cast of thousands as we get ready to recap the next episode of Survivor for our live show for this season, Eric.
Oh, my goodness. I have seen the crew that you are assembling. This is going to be one for the ages. And this is not shtick. I am not going along with your promotions here. I wish I would be there. What a crew. This is going to be such good times. This is going to be madness. I love it.
Yeah. I wish I could say that I've assembled this crew, that Bryce and Wendell have assembled a crew of more survivors than I know what to do with.
Oh, yes. I cannot wait to see you panickedly trying to negotiate getting them all on stage and who to give the most time to. It's saying hello to them at the bar while you're also juggling with the fans. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
And complimentary creamer for all.
Okay.
All right. It's going to be a lot of fun, of course. Thank you to the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast who make all of this possible. You can find out more about everything we're doing on Patreon. Head on over to robhasawebsite.com/patron for more information, our secret patron-only podcast feed, everything that we have going on in the patron community. robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Eric Stein, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.